Chof Kislev, 2nd of December, Rabbi Ari Shishla, Bris Mila v. Anti-Circumcisionist.
I want to try and do something which is just a little different maybe, because some are aware, perhaps more than others, that one of the challenges we have, and it's a growing challenge in today's world, in the Jewish world, is there's a movement of Jewish people against Bris Mila. I'm sure you're familiar with it over here, but sometimes we don't necessarily recognize how much of an issue it is, and how widespread. In Eretz Yisrael, for example, that's unfortunately one of the areas where there's a very strong movement against Bris Mila. I'll just tell you a story that we had to deal with recently, very recently, in our community, where a family had a baby. They, somehow the pediatrician, got into their heads that the baby had some kind of a condition, and because of this particular condition, the baby could not have a Bris Mila, and it had to be performed instead by a surgeon. Became a huge issue, because essentially what was happening was the pediatrician was playing on their emotions. They were a family who were first-time parents. They had a friend who had a mishap with a Bris. They had heard all kinds of things about how bad it could be if a Bris Mila is not done correctly. And they fell hook, line, and sinker for what it is that the pediatrician was telling them. And eventually, just how the story worked out is they had a Bris Mila kalocha, but it had to be done. They finally agreed that it should be done under the supervision of the leading surgeon, the pediatric surgeon in town. He oversaw the Bris. He gave the moel a terrible time. The moel, rightly so, insisted that if he's having the surgeon oversee him, he's not willing to perform the Bris Mila in public, because he didn't want to give a message that people should now believe that a moel needs a surgeon looking over his shoulder. And so he insisted on doing the Mila itself in their home, and the Siddur Mitzvah afterwards was in public, which was a very smart decision. He made it in conjunction with the local Beis Din. It was a very smart decision. So people should not buy into this new mentality, which seems to assume that a moel doesn't know how to do a Bris, if you can imagine such a thing. So that's one layer, is people who are partially concerned about medical concerns, and the other layer is people who have a philosophical issue with it. And they literally say, and we're dealing with another case like this right now, just in my immediate circle, I imagine there are many others as well, where they believe in philosophical terms that how dare you make a decision on behalf of another person to kaviochel mutilate their body. Imagine such a thing. And you should wait until the child is old enough to make their own decision. So the one family on England said, maybe you should wait till your child is old enough to make the decision if you should have his vaccinations or not. It's also painful. There's medical support to say that maybe it has side effects which are not so good. Maybe tell it you should, you know. But in any event, there's this growing movement of people, including Jewish men, who protest the fact of what was done to them when they were young, etc., etc. And it's a mishugas that we've never seen before. We've seen in history times that Jews were persecuted for not having Bris Mila, not that Jews themselves are turning against Mila. So what we want to examine over here today is a little bit different. I'm not going to look from a perspective of halacha, but rather to try and look at some interesting inyonim, more ruchnistic inyonim, associated with Bris Mila, and perhaps a correlation. Why is it at this particular time in our history that this is now the new frontier that we're battling, one of the new frontiers that we're battling within our own communities? Something else that's changed, I think we'll all acknowledge, and without getting into the genealogy of it, and exactly is it in fact the correct genealogy considering post-Sancheriv, I don't know if there is such a thing as a pure genealogy for any other nation, but one thing that we know for sure is for most of our history as Yidden, the enemy that we faced was the enemy known as Edom. Whether it was the genealogical descendants or not, then Mefroshim will say any nation who is Meitzar to Yisrael is automatically considered Edom. Even some say even Amalek. Any nation that is Meitzar to Yisrael is considered Amalek. But today we see a shift in the world that suddenly out of nowhere, a group of people who subscribe to a different kind of ideology, which is not the ideology of Edom, is on the rise, and that would be the people who associate with Yishmael. Again, it's not about ideology. We cannot necessarily track today's emerging fundamentalists necessarily to Yishmael, but we all acknowledge that it's a shift. There's a global shift in terms of who the power is, and particularly who the new Sonya Yisrael are. And none of these things are by chance. Obviously, there's a correlation. Everything that happens in the Jewish world, Baruchnius, is associated to what is happening in the broader world, Baruchnius. So they say, the joke that they say always is, you'll notice throughout history, there are not many Gerim from Yishmael. Right? Not many Gerim from Yishmael. So the joke that they always make is, because what happens when a candidate Ger comes from Yishmael to the local base then? So he starts asking the questions, what do I need to do in order to become Jewish? So they tell him, what do you have to do to become Jewish? Well, the first thing is, there's certain foods that you cannot eat. He says, okay. You know what? Foods that we can't eat? I have foods that we don't eat. So then you say to him, you're going to have to cover your head. He said, cover my head. Your wife is going to have to be tznirzdik. He said, yeah, you call that tznirz. We'll tell you what tznirz is. You're telling me I have to daven 3 times a day. He said, 3 times a day. It's like a discount. And you have to have a bris milah. He says, I have a bris milah. So it goes. So Yishmael turns around after and says, I don't have to be megayer. I'm already so much like you. I don't have to be megayer to be like you. That's the joke. The Arizal says differently. The Arizal says that the reason that there are no Gerim from Yishmael, by and large, that there are no Gerim from Yishmael, is because Yishmael was born from Avraham Avinu before he had a bris. So because Avraham Avinu had not yet had a bris, there was not yet the Kedusha in his body at the time that he conceived Yishmael. Therefore, Yishmael does not have the same propensity to come tachas kamfashkina. Interesting. So immediately we see that there's a correlation between Yishmael Be'etzem and the Inyan of Bris Milah. Take it a step further. We know that when the Eibishter gave the instruction of Bris Milah originally, who was Mol? Yishmael. In fact, that's the big machlokes that Yishmael has with Yitzchak. He says, you were Mol at 8 days old. I was Mol at 13 years old. So therefore, Sheli Gadol Mishalach. You know, it's a much greater achievement that I was a conscious adult person who decided to have Bris Milah, and you were nothing. You had no choice. It was decided for you. You were too young to understand what's going on. That's not a true dedication to God. So what does Yitzchak answer? What does Yitzchak answer? He says, you dedicated yourself to the Eivishter only with one Eiver in your body, and quite honestly, in a very superficial way, it's not a very deep incision. Me, I'll be willing to give everything. I'll be willing to be moistened my whole body to the Eivishter. And straight after that, says, Vayehi achara dvorim o'ele. Achara dvorim o'ele, Rashi says, it's achara dvorim shel Satan. But the Medrash says, achara dvorim, these dvorim, these words that are going on between Yitzchak and Yishmael, like Yitzchak says, I'll be willing to sacrifice everything. So that was the response of Yitzchak to the claim of Yishmael that his bris is great. That claim that Yishmael has about the greatness of his milah compared to the milah of Yitzchak sits at the fundamental understanding of what is different between how we understand milah and how they understand milah. Circumcision is very much part of their society, and it's very much the Havdil part of our society, but for completely different reasons. And we'll see in a moment that the emergence of an anti-circumcision movement is very likely connected to the Yishmael Dicker version of what a Bris Milah is. Before we get to that, right in the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, we have the famous, we read it on the Haftarah of Pesach, we have the famous Pasuk, where Hashem says to Yehoshua, he says, make for yourself a knife, v'shuv moiles bnei Yisrael shenis, and go back to be mol yidden shenis, a second time. So the question is, what do you mean a second time? The first pshat that's brought, we're going to just look at the pshat in Rashi, even though other people bring the same pshat as well, but the first pshat that Rashi brings And the klal in Rashi is he always brings, the first explanation is always that which is closer to pshuto yishol mikra. So the first pshat that he brings is what shein is, that the Yidden were mol when they left Mitzrayim, and then for the entire duration of the period in the Midbar, they were not mol. Why? Because of sakana, it's ruach tzvoinis, that they didn't have the kind of healing process that you need. So they were not mol for the entire period in the Midbar. Now, shein is for the second time since Yitzias Mitzrayim, they were going to have a milah. It's a pretty harsh thing to suggest about the Yidden that for all the time that they were in the Midbar, worth the Anane HaKobet, they protected them from every imaginable threat that existed. And for most of the time that they were in the Midbar, they were static. They didn't move. Only 42 Matzois in the course of 40 years. They were not moving every month to Kandonishtik. They stayed in places for years at a time.
Shevet Levi managed.
What?
Shevet Levi managed.
Yeah, exactly. Shevet Levi managed Takat HaBris. It's a very harsh thing to suggest that the Bnei Yisrael did not have a bris the whole 40 years in the desert. So apparently because, again, a klal in Rashi, what Rashi does is he offers a pshat which is closer to pshuto yishol mikra. If that pshat raises any kind of question, then he'll say davar acher. Let me give you a second explanation, which is not necessarily so close to pshuto yishol mikra, but it will address the question that you had with the first pshat. So the first pshat, which is closer to pshuto yishol mikra, sheinis means literally sheinis through the whole course of the period of history. It's only the second time that they had a bris. That leaves the open-ended question, but do you really think that for such a long period of time they did not give the children a bris milah? So therefore he brings the second, Rabbi Seinu Amru. Okay, Rabbi Seinu Amru is quoting over here he's quoting over here in Gemara. Rabbi Seinu Amru, sheinis zoi priyas milah. Okay, shalonit na Avraham Avinu. Two things he says. Number one, sheinis is not time. Sheinis is a second part of the procedure of milah. Second of all, the second part of the process of milah, namely priya, that was not given originally to Avraham Avinu. So let's understand what's going on over here. What's the difference between milah and priya? The two stages in the process of bris milah. So the definition of milah is called hasoras ola hagasa, to remove the so-called thick or more grub piece of skin. Priya is the ola hadaka, kind of a membrane, kind of a thinner kind of ola that has to be removed.
So does that mean that Yitzhak, like Hashemu, didn't have priya?
It's a good question. It's an interesting question. And we'll see in a moment possibly an answer to that question. Possibly. Okay? It says, Leinitna l'Avram Avinu. It doesn't say, Leinitna l'Avram Ubonav. What's the difference? We know that Rashi says, by Avram Avinu, that it doesn't use the word es. By Yishmol, it says, that by Yom es Yishmol. But what's the difference? Rashi says, because Avram Avinu was already an older man by then, and so therefore, Poshet Begashmus, it wasn't so much to remove. So could be, that by Avraham Avinu personally, there was no need for priya in the same way as there is for a newborn baby, pasha, just because of the gashmistic state. And at that time, anybody who was mol at that time did so without priya. Lav dafka, does this apply to Yitzchak? It's a very good question. Okay? So what's the difference? The difference is between what's called the orla hagasa and the orla hadaka. Let's take it out of the physiological, anatomical sense and understand what it means in a philosophical sense. The definition of orla, how do we define orla? Rashi gives a synonym for orla. What's the synonym? Anybody remember?
Blockage.
It means otum, right? Orel means otum, something which is blocked or covered. Right? So something which is blocked or covered or concealed. That's essentially what, even physiologically, that's what orla is. So you have Orla HaGasa and Orla HaDaka, which in the language of Kabbalah is called Klipa Gasa and Klipa Daka. What's the difference between Klipa Daka and Klipa Daka? Very simply, a Klipa is like a peel or a shell. So I always wonder, the first human being who ever found a coconut, what prompted him to look inside? It doesn't look anything like it should be edible. That's what you call Klipa HaGasa. That's what you call a heavy shell. that from the outside, not only does it protect the fruit that's on the inside, but it completely hides the fruit from you. You don't even recognize that there's a fruit on the inside. Masha Enkein, something like an apple, that also has a peel on it, but that we would call a klipa hadaka. That's a very light peel. It's not difficult to remove, and the reality is you don't even have to remove it. You can still get to the apple. So klipa hagaso, the heavier kind of covering, has to be removed. If you don't remove it, you cannot get to where you want to get to. You cannot get through the atum, that which is covered. Klipa hadako, you could believe, if I don't remove it, it's still okay. It's kind of like certain wrappings that food comes in. That's made out of rice paper. If you don't remove it, you don't remove the wrapping, okay, you could still eat it, it's still edible. So you have a klipa hagasa and a klipa hadako. Mol veloi pora, according to halacha, mol veloi pora. If a person only does the first stage of mila without the second stage, keilu loy mol. Al pi halacha, that's useless. It does not qualify as bris mila. It may well qualify in the world as circumcision, but it does not qualify as bris mila. Mol veloi pora, keilu loy mol. Now that's very interesting because we see that originally, when Avraham Avinu was given Mila, it was without Priya. And today, practically in Halacha, without Priya, it's like nothing. It's considered absolutely like nothing. Why is it relevant over here, in this particular point in Tanakh, where Yehoshua is about to take the Yidden into Eretz Yisrael, that now he should give them a Bris Mila? Why dafka now? So we're told that you can only get to be Yoyresh Eretz Yisrael b'schus HaMila. With Priya, right? If you want, we'll get to Priya in a second. If you want to be Yoresh Eretz Yisrael, you want to have a chance, a claim that Eretz Yisrael belongs to you, so Eretz Yisrael is toloi in Mila. Actually, more correctly, in order to be considered a nation that Hashem chooses as the Aman Nivchar, for that you have to have Mila. So to get out of Mitzrayim, for that, you have to have Mila. If you want to have a connection to Hashem, you have to get rid of what we call the klipa hagasa, to escape from the darkness and the slavery of Mitzrayim, not only gashmistik, but ruchnistik as well. If you want to get out of that, you need to have Mila. That's stage one. Stage two, you don't only want to get out of Mitzrayim, so to speak, sur meira, get away from the negative, but you also want to get into a realm of kedusha, into Asetoi. For that, it's not good enough just to have Mila. For that, the kind of bris that you have to have is Mila plus Priya. So when the Yidden are standing on the threshold of going into Eretz Yisrael, at that point, Yehoshua has to be Moles Bnei Yisrael Shenis. He has to now add, even according to the Mandama that day, throughout the whole 40 years in the desert, we're doing Mila. That would imply they were doing Mila without Priya. Now they're coming into Eretz Yisrael. You want to upgrade to this high level of Kedusha. You want to be Yoresh Eretz Yisrael. For that, you have to have Mila with Priya. Now we know that one of the greatest areas of contention, which has existed for hundreds of years, and is much more pronounced right now, is that Yishmael claims Shelonuli. Eretz Yisrael is ours. It's interesting to note that throughout the whole of history, there have been many nations who have conquered that region. From the Romans, to the Byzantines, to whoever it was, the Crusaders, the Ottomans, all various people, who all took over the entire region, Eretz Yisrael included. Not one of those nations ever claimed that Eretz Yisrael is theirs. They claimed that they had conquered a land, in the same way as they conquered other lands. None of them made a taina that it's Shelonui. Comes along suddenly out of nowhere, comes along with Yishmael, and Yishmael says, Shelonui, this is our land. And it's fascinating because it frustrates us terribly. We look at the kind of statements that they make, and we know that it's Sheker Gomer, and the whole world swallows it, hook, line, and sinker. I've just come from Istanbul. We did a talk over there, I forget what day of the week it is. It was on Monday night. So on Monday afternoon, I was with the local Chabad Shliach over there, we're taking the metro. It's like a little tram that runs through the town, and there's a guy standing over there. I was already a little bit uneasy to go there in the first place. So a guy standing over there, and he's looking at us. You know the expression, if looks could kill? He's mamash looking at us. Eventually, he says, Israeli? And I thought, oh boy, here we go, you know? So we said, yeah. How did he know? So he says, he points at himself and says, Falistani. It's like, wonderful, you want to tell me you're a Turk, Ismaili. So the guy says loud in front of the whole train, he says, you're killing our people. He said, yeah. His girlfriend, funnily enough, was pulling on his arm, you know, to try and de-escalate him in the middle of the train. I thought she thought that he was going to get lynched by everybody else. I don't know exactly what she was thinking. But that kind of an attitude, to get up and say that break card like that, you're kidding our people, we're shaking because of, I mean, let's be, you know, what that's what's happening, we're going on a genocide. Next door in Syria, there's something called genocide. You cannot compare. And then on top of that, they make statements that Harabai is not Harabais, and there was never a Beis Hamikdash, etc. The whole world swallows it. Never before in history have we faced such a showdown. And the reason for that showdown, the Zohar tells us that ever since Sarai Menu set Avram Avinu, Goreish Esa Amo Hazois Ve'ezbeno, ever since then Yishmael feels that he was kicked out of his home, and he's going to always want to try to come back to reclaim his home. Ah, you would say, what koyach does Yishmael have to come and claim the home when the Eibishter was clear that Ki beYitzchak Yikare Lecha Zorah, and that's who the land belongs to? So he says, why? Two reasons. The one reason is, Avram Avinu himself said, Lu Yishmael Yichye Lifanecha. Lu Yishmael Yichye Lifanecha. The way we read the story is, Halavai Yishmael should be a decent guy, he should follow in the path of what Hashem wants from him. But the Zohar says, Vai, vai, lahai, bakosha. Woe to Avram Avinu that he asked for such a thing, that because of this, Yishmael will always have, until Mashiach comes, he'll always have an opportunity to be lifanecha, in front of the Eibishter, in other words, in Eretz Yisrael. How so? Because Yishmael is going to taina that the access to Eretz Yisrael is through a bris, and we have a bris. We're Mal, our children. And so the description that's brought, it's brought in fact in a mimer from the Balatanya, where he explains something really interesting. He explains that this, that it's based also in the Zohar, that it says through the generations, the Sar of Yishmael, every nation obviously has its Sar, the Sar of Yishmael comes to the Eibishter and says, how come it is that you took my home, you kicked me out of it, and you gave it to Bnei Yisrael? So Hashem says, why? Because in order to get Eretz Yisrael, you have to be Mol. So the Sar of Yishmael says, but my descendants are Taka Mol. And I know we all think that they did at 13, but apparently they're all different minhagim in Yishmael, about how old you do it. Anything from 7 days all the way up. So we're Taka, we're Mol. How come we can't have Eretz Yisrael? So Eibishter says back to him, the Mila that you do is lo kidekoyos. It's not the way that Mila was supposed to be. Why? Because you're Mulvalo Para. The Mila that you give to your kids is only what we would call circumcision. But you do not remove the Orla Hadaka. And therefore, you have still some blockage that prevents you from going into Eretz Yisrael and owning Eretz Yisrael. So the Sar Shel Yishmael says to Hashem, yeah, but still, the fact is we're Mol, nobody else, no other nation is Mol, we're Mol. So Hashem says, if that's the case, the Lashon, by the way, is an interesting Lashon, he says, not only Loike to call Yos, he says, your Mila is rake. It's empty. It's empty of whatever Mila is supposed to be. So Yishmael says, but doch, at the end of the day, we taka give him Mila. So Hashem says to the Sar Shel Yishmael, in that case, you will have Shlita in Eretz Yisrael until Mashiach comes. Shlita does not necessarily mean that they rule the whole place, but you'll have a Shlita, some kind of Shlita in Eretz Yisrael until Mashiach comes. What? Harava is primarily. When Mashiach comes, that's it. Then we're gonna be megale to the world that your mila is worth nothing, and you're going to see that the true access to Eretz Yisrael comes from mila with priya. What does this mean practically? It's so interesting. So in the Lashon of Kabbalah, what we call klipa gasa and klipa daka is the difference between something which is an obvious taint, an obvious negative, an obvious tumor, and a subtle tumor. A klipa gasa is in your face. You know exactly what it is. You can identify immediately what the problem is, and therefore, anytime you can identify the problem, you can solve it much more easily. Yedia samachla chatzi refuah. Klipa daka is where it's difficult to put your finger on what exactly the problem is over here. So again, let's go back to the ger. A ger from Edom comes along, you look at him, you can see straight away this is a klipa hagasa. If you want to become Jewish, there are many things that you're going to have to change from top to bottom. You're going to have to change your eating habits, you're going to have to change your dressing habits, you're going to have to start to daven, etc., etc. We can clearly identify where the problem lies and what we have to do about it. Likewise, throughout history, when our enemy was primarily from Edom, it was very clear, halacha biyodua Esav soina leYaakov. So that's it, we know. We know who the enemy is. We know what they want. We know that they're out to destroy, firstly, the Jewish way of life, and then when that fails, the Jewish people, because that's always been the methodology. First make Zeres against our practice, and then make Zeres against our person. So we know what we're dealing with, and eventually, over the course of time, we work out a method how to confront it back. For example, they tried to always kill us in their country, so now what we're going to do is we'll establish our own country, re-establish it, and we'll make sure that we're very powerful within our own country. So therefore, if the klipa hagasa, if a brute Edomite comes to try and attack us again, we'll hit him back twice as hard. Suddenly, we're dealing instead with a klipa hadaka, with a much more subtle kind of enemy. Not an enemy who gets up and says, we want to attack you. An enemy who flips the story around and starts to say, you're attacking us. We're the victims. It's a whole different way of thinking. Or to put it into slightly different words. If you look through the course of history, throughout the course of Jewish history, we had many challenges in our own communities where the challenges were obtuse, they were clear, we understood exactly what the challenges were. Even in recent times, we understood in our own communities what the challenges were. Here were people, let's talk even 50 years ago, here were people who were not from, who were not involved in Limudat Torah, in Kiyum HaMitzvah, so we understand exactly what the problem is. Bring them in. Teach them. Make them start to take it to be Shema Mitzvahs. Now we're living in a different world, it's not so poshut. You have people living within our own communities, and the klipa is much more subtle. You have a person who wears all the levushim, and does all the things, but internally we don't know what's going on, or what things they're exposed to, or what their online, what access they have, or where their hashkafas are, or what, we were talking a little bit before, what machlokas exists within communities, even though externally everybody's doing everything that they should. So, now, at this period in our history, you could say that the challenge is more priya than it is mila. In other words, the kind of challenges that we're facing are more subtle challenges than the kind of challenges that we faced previously in our history. And Ulai Yeshleimar, that's because, like in the time of Yehoshua, we're standing now on the threshold of Mashiach Zeiten, where we're going to go back, not just to re-inhabit Eretz Yisrael under a government, whether that government be in line with Torah or not, but dafka, that we should re-inhabit Eretz Yisrael as it's supposed to be, with a Melech and a Sanhedrin and Alpi Torah, etc. So as we prepare for that transition period in history, Moelis B'nai Yisrael Sheinis, we have now the challenge of dealing with the removal of this klipa hadaka, the subtleties, both the subtlety of our enemy and the subtleties within our own community, challenges that we didn't necessarily have before. So what happens any time in history, and this is, we can see it again and again and again from our own history, any time in history that we've had a primary focus of what our avodah has to be, that is where Zel Umazeh, that's where the biggest Yetzer Hara lands up being at that time. So in the period of history where we are now, which is a period of history where we have to tackle the Orla Hadaka, the subtle element of a proper milah, removing those things which block us from Kedusha. So what do we have? We have Marasayich or Machrivayich Mimeich Yetzeyu. Within our own community, we have people, what do they choose of all the things to oppose? Bris Milah. Because somewhere internally, subconsciously, their Yetzirah knows that if they allow us to fulfill what we have to do, that's it. Mashiach's coming, everything's going to be fine. So where does the opposition come from? It comes from an opposition to Milah. So, Avishai should help us, that we should be able to overcome the anti-circumcision movement. And Avishai should help us, that we should be able to illustrate to the world that Yishmael Taka has a Milah, but he has no Priya. And therefore, to everybody else who doesn't see subtlety, they look like they're such wonderful people. Open your eyes and recognize that sometimes when there's a subtle problem, it's much more dangerous than when there's an open and obvious problem. It's like when a person has a little crack in a machine, or whatever, you don't notice it, and that's when all the tzoros begins. And we should talk about Zohar to the Gula Shleima, and it should be in Chodesh Kislev, Miyad.